Welcome to the Edge Shift podcast with Katie Novak.
Really around this idea of like research and strategies and people doing interesting things.
And Chris Astle.
Doing what's best for kids, like putting kids at the center.
Our goal at EdShift is to dive into educational trends and practices and to connect you with educators and innovators around the world who are committed, in subtle and in grand ways, to shifting the fabric of education. Check out the show notes for ways to connect with us and our guests.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the EdShift podcast. Really excited to be here with you today with a special guest whose voice you will be familiar with. This is Katie, and my guest today is Chris. Hi, Chris.
I love being the special guest. That's so much fun.
I love it, too, because we get to talk about something that is up high on our list of favorite topics for both of us.
So true.
Yep, and that is neuroscience. So before anyone, you know, presses pause and goes like, wow, you know, like I really did not get a science degree in school. I'm not interested in this. What does this have to do with education? Just like, you know, let's define what we mean and what we talk about when we're talking about neuroscience, Chris.
Oh, what a great idea. Because again, I definitely see people sometimes glaze over when I want to talk about the neuroscience of learning, which is my favorite thing. And it sounds a little bit more unapproachable than it is. So if we break it down, like we know that our brains are super important and that's where learning takes place. And so when we start to think about how our brain is constructed and how information is relayed within our brain, then we can understand a little bit more how and why we learn and how we learn differently. And we can start to understand some of the nuances in how brains function. And I think when we are thinking about students and thinking about teaching, having an understanding of this in very layman's terms, like we're going to talk about this in very friendly language that is accessible. But when you understand a bit of what happens in your brain, it gives a lot of context to some of the things that are happening in our classroom. And so if we think of our brain, it's this big gray blob, and there's lots of these cool long cells in it, and they're all connected to each other. And the way they talk to each other is by sending little chemical messages across the connections called synapses. And our brain is divided into two hemispheres, which a lot of us know. And we hear a lot about left brain and right brain, but there's also some very unique ways that information is relayed across those hemispheres. And so understanding how information moves in our brain and how emotions affect some of that, when we can kind of understand all of those things and how they influence each other, then we understand how we learn and we can help our students learn better.
I love that explanation. It's a great blob with lots of really cool long cells. Yes. Magic. So when we think about the process of learning, how would you describe that in the most sort of accessible sense of neuroscience? How does learning happen?
Oh, yeah. So when we think of like a little baby brain and, you know, the cells aren't as long, they're not as connected. And every time we put a new piece of information in there, a new connection grows. And so we go from like a very simple piece of fabric to something that's very complex and interconnected, and there's lots of different ways. So think about, you know, if we build a town and we build more roads into it, and then we build another town and we build more roads between them, and all of a sudden there's different ways to get from the first town to the second town. We're building those kind of information highways in our brain. And the more we learn, the more roads or connections we have. And some of them are faster than others, right? Because we use them more. And so we're able to develop that. So putting information in is really finding a place to anchor it and building a road between them so we can start to pull things out along all of these pathways we've created in our brain.
So I'm reading this really interesting book right now that I've told you a little bit about, Chris, called The Secret Life of the Mind.
I love it.
And one of the things that it talks about in there is this early development of the brain And the fact that for a long time, scientists thought that we were born, you know, tabula rasa, blank slate, you know, nothing to start us off. But really that what they're learning is that there's a lot going on in there already in infants, in babies, and that they show, you know, these neural pathways that are already beginning to form from the very, very beginning of life. And one thing that this book dives into a lot is how learning language looks in the brain, and the idea that we learn language gradually. And just because a tiny human doesn't have the language to express something yet doesn't mean that they don't know it, doesn't mean that the neural pathways for, you know, I want to choose red over blue aren't firing, but they don't have the language, right, to talk about the fact that they want to choose blue, or why they're choosing blue, or why they, you know, look at their mother's face longer than they look at a stranger's face. You know, the neural pathways are there, and the capacity to learn language just has to be built around them so that they can express what's going on in their brain. All of that to get to, you know, some of these ideas of language learning and the importance of connecting each side of our brain. You know, you mentioned as you were describing this, you know, many people will be familiar with the way the brain is constructed and that we have two lobes and they're connected. But what does that really mean in practice for the transfer of knowledge and where we store things?
Trying to keep this simple in terms of like what we really need to know in the classroom. So it means a lot. And one of the things that makes us all unique is how we use the different sides of our brain. A lot of us favor one over the other. Some people tend to be more balanced than others. So you'll actually see a correlation between like your big picture, the people who see maybe the forest but not the trees tend to be more balanced in how they use both lobes. And then a lot of our kind of detail-oriented people tend to maybe favor one lobe over the other. And so the brain communicates between them. And for some people, this is faster than others. And so a lot of the different ways that we think can happen in different lobes. And so what's really interesting about that as well is, so you were talking about, you know, babies are, they're primed to learn language. Like they're looking for that. And regardless of what that language is, right, they'll learn the language that their parents are speaking. They're primed to learn, you know, maybe sign language, anything that allows them to communicate. Our brains are set up to do that. But our brains are also kind of, from an evolutionary standpoint, we need to make things easy. It is all about survival, and our brains aren't going to necessarily use energy that's unnecessary because we need to stay alive. So the same process that wires our brains to learn language is also wired as a process to shut off. And that's kind of an evolutionary protective feature that around 14, our brains aren't necessarily receptive to language. For those of us who learned our first language in high school, it's not as sticky as something that we might have learned earlier on. And that's a really interesting thing to think about, particularly for our older learners, because the older you are, you're not mapping language the same way, and you're not mapping language in the same place in your brain necessarily. So for our students who have maybe come to us and they are speaking English as a second language and they're acquiring that in high school, their ability to transfer information between both sides of the brain and between both languages is actually a little bit slower than someone who maybe learned that language as a child. I have really good friends. He is from Spain. She is from the US, and their kids have grown up having to speak a different language to each parent. And they literally swap language mid-sentence, and they can flow between the two completely fluidly because they've done it since birth. And then I didn't learn my second language until I was 11. So really kind of approaching that point where your brain is not wired for it. And I don't do great. I can speak one language or I can speak the other, but I can't swap between them super easily because my brain just didn't make the connections that way. And so that's something to think about you know, for our students who are emerging English language speakers is they're not going to navigate as quickly. And it doesn't mean that they don't know it. And it doesn't mean that they, you know, just like you said, that they're not, they don't have things that they want to express. It just, it's a process that slows down. And I think it's a really interesting thing to think about in our classrooms is who are our students? You know, we don't necessarily know all of their history, but we do know how to make space for reflection and wait time. And those things are actually really important when it comes to how we learn and how our students process.
That's huge. And yeah, the idea that just because someone doesn't have the ability or the knowledge yet to express something in the way that I understand it, doesn't mean that they don't know the thing, you know? And so I think that that idea of self-reflection too, of like, how else can we encourage people, students, to express themselves, to share what they've learned in different ways to help them, you know, tap into those neural pathways that do exist, you know, and allow them to express what they do have available to them.
And it actually comes back to, you know, one of my favorite things to talk about when it comes to teaching is kind of this art of how do you ask one question at a time? And, you know, when we're thinking about emerging language speakers and when we're actually asking them two things, because we're asking you to do something in a language that is not as natural to you as a language you picked up as a small child, the language process is a question you're asking first, and then the content question that you're asking is secondary. And so thinking about, okay, if I'm asking the student to complete a task, and it is actually two questions for them, because one of them has to do with language acquisition and expression, and the other has to do with the content that we are learning in our classroom, how can I restructure that? How can I change maybe the pace or the place that the student is completing the task in to allow them the processing time they need to answer the question that actually is not related at all to what we're assessing, but for them has to be answered before they can actually respond to what we're asking them to do and show us that they have in fact mastered the learning.
Big time. Yeah, absolutely. Coming back to the idea of, you know, these two hemispheres of our brain, many of us have heard our whole lives, you're kind of one or the other, right? You know, you are left brain, so you're more creative, free-flowing, you might be less organized, or you're right brain, so you're data-driven and super focused, right? You and I both listened to a super interesting podcast a few months ago now.
Yes.
But that really, you know, I'd heard myth versus truth on left brain versus right brain, you know, interesting, but that this podcast, and we'll link it in the show notes for you. It's one of Adam Grant's podcasts.
It's Chantel Pratt. And there's a book too, The Neuroscience of You, yeah. Which if you want to nerd out on any of this, totally a worthwhile read.
Yeah. Yeah. That conversation totally blew up this idea of right brain versus left brain that I had still been holding, you know. So tell me a little bit more about that, how you've thought about it, and, you know, what we know to be more true today than this idea of left brain versus right brain.
Well, it's how, for me, it's how we process information, right? Like, and depending on how you think, like some of us are very visual thinkers and some of us are very language-based thinkers. And those are actually the anchors we use in our brain to store information. So when I was talking at the beginning, when you want to learn something, you're not learning it in a vacuum. You're anchoring it to something that's already there. And so we think in different ways. Like, and some of us do a good job of kind of like doing both. But my daughter, for example, she's not a language-based thinker. She's a very visual-based thinker. And so that changes how she interacts with things. She's brilliant spatial awareness. She's like, you know, very good at kind of abstract type things. But then when I make an assumption that she is a language-based thinker, all of a sudden something is really hard for her. And so for me, understanding that, you know, everyone processes things differently, and giving them the time and the space to to process it in the way that makes sense to them, and then to express it in the way that makes sense to them. And we know when we're teaching kids, like, we're preparing them to go out and be successful in the world. And so part of that process is, okay, we know how you think, we know how you express this, but how do we get this to the product that's actually being asked of you? And I think that's an important step. And so as opposed to saying, you do this because you're a right brain thinker, or you do this because you're a left brain thinker, how can I help you understand how you're storing information, how you're making sense of it, how you can represent it, and then how we can think about iterating on how you've represented it to get it to the thing that's expected of you in terms of work product. And so I like a more global approach instead of that categorization of, you know, how people think and what that means they can be successful doing. Because I think, I think we all know that there are all sorts of different thinkers who've been successful doing all sorts of different things. And so opening up that door to more options and more variation and more creativity is, I think that's important.
Well, it comes back to that, you know, much discussed in history idea of like, oh, are you a visual learner? Mm-hmm. Are you a kinesthetic learner?
Which we finally debunked, right? I saw an article about that. It was called like Zombie Education Ideas That Refuse to Die, which I thought was a hysterical title. And we can probably reference that in the show notes as well. But yeah, like we all think always, and we may prefer one, but I think it's so interesting to help our students become more nimble and more agile and to understand their strengths and develop them, but also, you know, realize that in the world, we have to be good at all of this. Mm-hmm.
What kind of thinker are you, Chris? How do ideas come together in your brain?
Yes. I feel like I'm oddly balanced. Like I am definitely like a big picture thinker. And I also speak two languages, which I think starts to shift some of that. So I feel cocky saying it, but I feel like I'm very good at doing both. And that's kind of like what I bring to the table is kind of bridging some of that. What about you?
I like to think the same. I definitely have a lot of those more like right brain things that people would traditionally, you know, associate with that, but also, you know, a lot of the more left brain, like not the most organized person in the world. I like to be creative. I have a great sense of direction, you know, so like put all those things together, you know, and the balance. I'm very much not as much as I'm interesting, like in the forefront of my brain, I'm a very visual person. I like to create visual things. I like to take photos, all of these types of things. But the way my brain processes information is very language based. Like I'm not someone who like visualizes or like sees things. I think through it with my language. So it's interesting. And I think looking at all of those different bits and pieces helps us identify with ourselves. Probably some of us are a lot more, you know, balanced
than we realize, than we might think. Right. Yeah. Like, and for me too, like I'm a very intuitive thinker, but I'm also like a giant science nerd and like I love all the data. So, you know, it's hard to tease apart. One of the things I wanted to talk about today, because I love talking about it, but I think as we're talking about brains and how brains work and how brains develop is, you know, the role of mirror neurons, which what on earth is a mirror neuron? And it has to do a lot with, you know, like how babies learn, right? Like why they respond when you smile, they smile. And so our brains really learn by replicating and we're super social. And so when it comes to mirror neurons, we actually respond with similar emotion to things we see around us. And so why is that important in teaching? A smile goes a long way, right? Like when you see someone doing something, then you're more likely to do it as well. And we can give all thousands of examples of how this is actually true, but it's also really interesting because when we cross different species, most of the mammals we interact with on a regular basis also have mirror neurons. Some of them even more than us, which is actually what allows them to interact with us. And so how we hold ourselves in a space and just the energy we carry and our posture and whether or not we're, you know, carrying tension with us or letting go of tension, like all of that actually carries over into our students and their behaviors. And then when we go from there to brain chemicals, they're contagious too. The more stress you bring with you into a classroom, because of the amount of adrenaline and cortisol that you have, is going to actually increase your kids' adrenaline and cortisol levels as well. And so it's really interesting that like neuroscience and brain chemistry aren't in a vacuum. Like how we come into the classroom and what we bring with us is going to be delivered to our students and reflected back to us, right? And so I'm grumpy. I have 30 grumpy faces staring back at me. I don't get less grumpy. And so that one, I think, is just, you know, from a what's one thing I could learn about neuroscience and go into my classroom and do tomorrow? You know, remember to smile.
Yeah. Yeah. And to just talk, thinking about what you said about, you know, the tension and those things. Okay, what can we do? You know, because tension and stress is going to make your brain operate differently. What can we do to start off the day, whether it's for ourselves personally, whether it's in our classroom, let's like get up and jump around and shake it off and like physically
let go of some change of that tension, right? Because we can. So there's, you know, there's four neurotransmitters that kind of like make our brains happy and also kind of promote learning. And that's serotonin, dopamine, oxytocin, and endorphins. And so all four of them are created when we get up and we exercise and we move. So simply like having the class come in and move around and, you know, interact with each other or go outside. Exposure to natural light is going to give you two of the four. And so just having that sunlight, having that movement. And then when we do things like create or set goals or even just socializing or laughing, like all of these things are going to prime our brains with these kind of positive neurotransmitters, which is going to help counter the effect of adrenaline and cortisol, which we don't have a lot of control over because we can't control what's happening in our kids' home environments. We can't control what's happening in the world. Like there's a lot of things going on, but taking the time to let our kids socialize, to let them laugh, to laugh with them, to take a break, to get up and move around, to at least look out the window if we can't go outside. None of these things has to take more than 5 minutes. But all of a sudden, these things that are preventing connections from being made in the brain, again, from an evolutionary standpoint, if you have cortisol and adrenaline, your body thinks that you might die soon or have to avoid some type of danger. And it's not investing the energy in making new connections between those fun, long, stringy brain cells, because that's not going to keep you alive. So we have to dampen those responses and produce these positive neurotransmitters so that we can actually see the growth and see the connections and create new learning in the brain.
Yeah. It matters so much in the classroom and it matters a lot in the staff room too, doesn't it?
And mirror neurons, they're everything. yeah, like how you walk in there is going to change how people interact with you. And then it just becomes a cycle. So fun fact with mirror neurons. So, you know, and now our audience will know, in my spare time, I like to gentle wild horses. And horses are super cool because they have a ton of mirror neurons. But how you carry yourself into a space with a wild horse actually determines whether you walk out in one piece or not. But they're super receptive to it. And our students are super receptive to it too. And some of it, you know, like I've had horse feet flailing above my head and I'm like, oh, yeah. This is not great.
Good thing you're short.
but again, it's that like ability to be calm and to fix your face and project what you would like to have projected back to you. And it gets you the outcome. Sometimes it takes longer than others, right? And that's true of humans, animals, it doesn't matter. But having that intention and knowing that you actually can control to some degree, some of the things that are happening around you by the way you choose to carry yourself. I think that's huge. And I think it's something that any of us can do with zero knowledge of science.
Yeah. It's so fascinating and wonderful. I think how, you know, physiology, neuroscience, and both the conscious and unconscious, and that would get us into a whole different category, so let's not go there today, but how the consciousness of our energy really interplay with each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that we have more control over our minds and our physiology than we know we do.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah. So I think we will we'll leave with that today, Chris. I think, but expect a few more in this neuroscience series on the EdShift podcast, because we like talking about this. And I think we mentioned three things in the conversation today that we could have, you know, done a whole
podcast on.
Yeah, even further. So before we go, Chris, I have to ask, what was the best part of your day today?
Best part of my day today. Okay, you're gonna laugh. I'm reading this really cool book about how to create a self-sustained existence on horseback. So it's about a couple who literally like just ride around the world on the back of their horses. But the key of it really is about relationships. And I was reading that like when I first got up this morning before I started my day. And it's really fascinating, and it's really got me reflecting on the power of relationships and the power of connection. Mm. And, you know, related to what we talked about today, the science that drives that. And maybe one day I will be planning a self-contained journey on the back of a formerly wild horse. So stay tuned.
Amazing. I can't wait to see that part of your journey.
All right. Well, now I have to ask you too, because, you know, we were really co-special guests in this one. What was the best part of your day today?
The best part of my day, I'm like looking out the window being like, it's sunny. It hasn't been sunny here in a few days, but that is not, jealous. That's not my real answer. That's not my real answer.
It can be an answer. Sun is very good for us.
It is. It's giving me some good neurochemicals. But the even better part of my day, again, is actually sort of similar in the sense of relationships. I've had a few conversations and meetings with colleagues today where I've gotten to celebrate people's growth, where I've gotten to, you know, talk about really interesting things. And so just, yeah, the relationships and the connections that I've had on an otherwise busy day, the connections and the relationships have definitely been the best part.
I love it. I love that.
Thank you, everyone, for hanging out with us while we chatted about neuroscience today. Hope you enjoyed it, because we're going to do it again. And yeah, if you enjoyed this conversation, connect with us on social, email us, reach out, leave us a review if you're listening on a podcast platform where reviews are a thing. We would love to hear from you, and we look forward to chatting with you next time on the EdShift podcast. Have a great day.